I love it already.
We're recording.
And again, wait, again, be free. You
should
swear.
Shut the fuck up. Yes, I know.
Oh my God. Okay. What's up, everyone? This is Sarah Hudson.
And this is Evan Bogart.
And welcome to
Right to the Source. Listen, we all know creativity can be your best friend and your worst enemy. On Right to the Source, we dive deep inside the minds of creative beings to find out how they do it. Today, let's find out how J-Heart does it. So let it go and let's go right to the source.
Did you love that?
Oh, I loved it.
Hi, Sarah Hudson.
Hi, Evan.
What's up?
I'm good. I'm just, you know, hustling.
Will you do me a favor?
What?
Will you tell us about our guest this week?
I sure will. So this episode's guest, J-Heart, is not only one of our dearest, beloved friends and co-writers, but is a multi-platinum selling, Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, producer, and arranger. That's right. Mm. J-Heart has worked with a number of popular artists, including Keith Urban, Usher, Justin Bieber, Camila Cabello. I never know really how to say.
Does anybody know?
Cabello.
Is it Cabello or Cabello?
I think it's Cabello.
Cabello. That's what I thought. Kygo, Little Mix, and countless others. J-Heart co-wrote Keith Urban's hit single, Wasted Time, and the single reached number one on the Billboard Country Airplay chart, and the album debuted at number one on the Billboard Top Country Albums chart. J-Heart also wrote and is featured as an artist on Kygo's latest album. The song is called Permanent, and it will slay your tits and your balls off.
Definitely.
He's recently been touring with Kygo around the world, and he's just an all-around incredible human creative being. J-Heart, we are so excited to have you as our guest and hear all about you and your process.
I'm happy to be here, guys.
Did that just warm the cockles of your heart?
It really stroked my ego. It's what I needed. It was perfectly validated.
Come to our podcast to stroke your ego and stroke other things.
So before we start every episode, we like to start with a segment called A Rose and a Thorn.
Ooh.
Hit it, Sarah Hudson.
And we sing, so you could join.
What?
It goes like this.
A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn.
Yes.
I got it.
You really got it.
On the first try. I should have done a harmony, though.
Should we do it again with a harmony?
Do it again? Let's do it one more time.
Okay, that'd be cool. Here we go.
A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn.
Wow.
I love that.
That's the best one I love that we've done so far.
I kind of want to just play J-Hearts from now on for every episode.
We could.
We'd be like, we're not going to sing this live anymore. We're just going to play the one we did with J-Hearts.
We could. You could be our featured guest.
Oh, as long as I can put it on my Wikipedia.
Yeah. You can put it on your PD.
Our next guest wrote the song Rose and the Thorn. No, I was kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is how you play. A rose is basically something you're incredibly grateful for right now.
Okay.
And a thorn is something that's literally a thorn in your side and you need to let it go.
Okay.
So we'll start with the rose because gratitude should always come first. Mm. And we'll end with the thorn so we can sage it away and let it go.
Mm, yes.
Okay, so let's start with everyone's rose. J-Heart, what's your rose? What are you grateful for? At this very moment.
Honestly, my dog.
Oh, that was mine last time.
Oh, shut up, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you.
Do no, I have no, to choose no, another good. One?
No,
really, no,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, I feel like
your dog can always be a rose.
I've literally fallen. I mean, he just captivates me.
What's his name? Tell us about him.
His name is Jackson, mm-hmm. and he is a little mutt. He's like a little black. I think he's part terrier, part chihuahua, maybe part dachshund. He's light of my life.
He really is a little light.
He is. He's my little guiding light.
He is.
My little guiding light.
And I always say there's a reason that God backwards is dog.
Right.
You say that every episode.
I know. I really do.
I hate that.
Well, there really,
I really hate
there
that.
There is a goddamn reason.
Did you get the God tattoo on your neck so that when you look in the mirror, it says dog?
Yeah, I did. I
like wow.
That. See?
Okay, so dog.
I'm going next.
Yeah, go next.
Okay, my rose, I think, right now is, I'm going to say my aunt, Hilda. Oh. Shout out, Aunt Hilda. She's actually my dad's cousin, but she's also my aunt. Why is that funny?
I like shout out Aunt Hilda.
I
it's
love
funny.
Hilda.
No, she is. I talked to her today, and this is why she's my rose, because I don't have a lot of family on my dad's side that I still kind of hang out with or talk to. And Hilda is just one of the good eggs. Mm. And she is so fierce and so funny. And so fabulous. And I just feel grateful for her. You know, to have an amazing blood relative.
Yeah.
That is just dope. That's my rose.
I love that.
Aunt Hilda, shout out.
That's really good.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was going to say. And I was like, boom, first thing, Aunt Hilda.
I like it. I love that. You know? I can't wait to meet Hildy.
Oh, you'll love her.
Evan?
Mine, I guess mine is a little similar. Mine's like having real friends. Is that like is like strange? I feel like
no.
I feel that.
No, I know, but I just feel like it's like something that people take for granted.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like being able to talk to certain people about anything and not feel judged and actually trust their opinion. Especially when you're going through stuff, you know, and, you know, people who either maybe they're in the business or they're not in the business or whatever, but just having that like real core friend base, you know, when you really just need a vent and like kind of bounce some stuff off somebody.
I love that.
Outside,
it's amazing.
So true. Outside of like someone you pay to do it, like just someone you don't pay to do it who will tell you what's up.
It's really like that's family.
I never take that for granted here in LA, especially.
I was also thinking though, like in music, I've met like some of my bestest friends. I mean, two of you included. Mm. And I've also met like some of the biggest assholes. So it's interesting.
But like, what are you working on?
Okay, let's move on to our thorns.
Okay.
So Jay Hart, what's a thorn in your side? Something you need to let go right now that you want to sage away?
Doubt. I have been this year especially because it's been the first year where I feel like I didn't continue on my expected path. I kind of like started doing other things that scared me a lot, and which is very rewarding. But as a byproduct of that, you start having doubt creep up because there's less certainty. I mean, there's no certainty ever, but at least like when you're doing the same thing every year and it's like, oh, I got more cuts this year than I did last year. I did better this year than I did last year. When you just completely throw a spanner in the works and do something different, it's just scary.
Yeah.
And so doubt, I've noticed this year, like has been really hard for me to try to wrap my head around just constantly telling that doubt to like take a back seat and, you know, telling it to shut the fuck up.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to say
it's so crazy.
Away.
I feel like someone's rose or someone's thorn always is like a foreshadow of my golden nugget.
Interesting. Oh. Well, really?
Yeah.
Well, Jay Hart doesn't know
what golden nugget. I know, but I'm just saying, like, what you said kind of foreshadows my golden nugget. I actually may have an answer for your doubt when we talk about golden nuggets later.
Full
so stay tuned.
Wow. Definitely stay tuned. Oh, my God.
All right, Sarah, your turn. Thorn it up.
My thorn is very silly.
Okay.
But it's my front porch. And I kind of...
No, no.
Yeah, it just is what it is at this very moment.
Right.
It Your is, front porch.
Yeah, because I pointed it out to you. There's paint on the porch and it's peeling.
Mm.
And I, it's,
shit,
this goes,
shit, shit,
this
shit,
goes
shit,
a little
shit.
Deeper though. No, it goes
fuck,
a little deeper.
Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Listen to where it goes before
okay.
you.
No, I'm listening.
Mock.
It is. Okay.
So it is peeling and I am very OCD in my brain.
Oh.
And I see, like we were saying earlier.
Your thorn is your OCD.
Well, I would, I'm getting there.
Oh.
Sorry.
So I see like every speck of dust, every little peel of the paint, da da da. And every time I open the door in the morning to leave the house into the world, I see the porch.
Right. So it's like the first thing.
And it's been, yes, Evan, you're correct. It's been triggering.
Sorry.
No, I'm not being rude. I'm just saying you're right. It is my OCD. That really is my thorn, and you helped me uncover it underneath the
But
the
I like
porch.
The front porch better.
Well,
I like the front porch better.
It started with the front porch.
It's like you stubbing your toe in the morning, right? It's like that idea. You leave your house and you notice something that annoys you,
yes.
and then you start your day on that.
Yeah, it feels like exactly like that, but I know I have to let it go, but it's just in my brain. Like, oh, and even throughout the day, I'll be like, fuck, like I need to... I want
the porch.
Do you, do you think about the porch when you're not here? When
yes,
you're not,
yeah. yes.
Are you like, you know?
I've always been like that, though.
At Whole Foods, and you're like, fuck the porch.
Kind of.
Oh, okay.
Or like later in the day, I'll think of it and I'll be like,
So what do you do about it?
I just have to be like, Sarah, chill, you know?
Yeah, what's that?
But I've always been like that. I think it's part of my anxiety.
But how do you solve that? How do you resolve that? Not the OCD part. Like, you have, to, like, how do you resolve the front porch?
Well, I'm going to get it sanded down and, like, painted, you know?
Paint the porch.
I'm going to paint the porch.
Hashtag paint the porch.
So, yes, my thorn is OCD underneath the porch. A little OCD underneath the porch.
Evan, what's your thorn?
Yeah, what's your thorn?
Okay, so as we've discussed before, you know, the difference between a rose and a thorn sometimes is your point of view and the way you look at it.
True.
So my thorn is a thorn just because it's really annoying and it's kind of simple as jet lag.
Mm.
I really
That's your thorn.
It's my thorn is jet lag because I just got back from Europe and I feel like I can conquer it every time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, from my point of view looking at it, is I was able to go on this wonderful trip and be with these wonderful people. So I'm really grateful for that. But my sleep patterns have been totally fucked up.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's messed up my routines in my day. Which has messed up my balance in my day. I found myself being like really unbalanced, imbalanced by the afternoon, not focused, not in the moment. It's just kind of like I don't wake up in time. Like in the morning, I wake up too early or I wake up too late, and I'm exhausted. So I'm not working out. I'm not going to my AA meetings. I'm not doing my meditation.
It's
or
throwing
doing my
off your
just
balance.
Throwing it all off. And so I love to travel, and I feel super grateful to go away and stuff. But when I come back, it like takes me a week to get back into my routine, and it's like I feel like all this pressure to like you gotta do it. You gotta just like get back in the routine. So I'm just kind of like battling and trying, and then I'm keep trying to remind myself to just go easy on myself.
Yeah.
Just take it easy. You know what? Who cares if you don't do your routine for a week?
Who cares?
Right.
Whatever. So anyway, so my thorn, depending on your point of view, could be a rose, but it's just annoying right now. I think that's what the thorn's supposed to be, just annoying right now.
I think we can like all that. Relate.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So
what we're going to do.
Your front porch.
Slash
yeah. OCD.
Yeah.
My jet lag / throwing off my balance.
And Jay Hart's doubt.
Yeah.
What we're going to do is Evan is lighting the sage.
We're actually going to sage them all away.
Oh.
And we're going to sage away these thorns and we're going to let them all go.
That was... amazing.
Did you feel it?
Yeah, it was like a renewal.
It just lifts.
A rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Every time the chimes play, I feel cleansed.
Yeah.
Same. J-Hart. And your real name is?
James John Aberhart.
That is hot.
James John. James I mean, that's John. Pretty British. James John Aberhart.
James John Aberhart. All right.
J.J. So, Aberhart.
Mm-hmm.
And you're from... Tell us where you're from. Tell us your origin.
I was born in London. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really hard for me to talk about it without using my English accent. But I was born in London.
Right.
And then I lived in London till I was 11.
Right.
Moved to Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And then grew up in the South. And
changed to a Southern accent right now.
And then grew up in the South.
In Atlanta?
Yes, in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I moved from Atlanta to LA 8 years ago.
Wow. Okay. Mm. Dope.
So very...
You're a jet setter.
I sure am, yes.
When do you remember first being creative? Was it in London or is it Atlanta?
Yeah, I remember...
Like your very first moment.
Oof. I used to dress up as yes. this TV presenter, Cilla Black, which is really embarrassing.
Is that a real TV presenter?
She was like an older lady.
Oh.
And why? You just loved her?
I loved her. And she used to do this show. I remember I used to be like obsessed with doing TV presenting. And she used to walk down to this theme song. And I would like play the theme song and like do my walk.
How old were you?
Like 4, maybe,
and
5.
And you dress up like in dresses?
Yeah, I would put heels on.
Oh my God. I would love to see. Do you have any pictures?
No, God, no.
So that's like your first moment. You just remember being like a performer.
Yeah, and I was like singing. There's a video of me at a birthday party where a girl is making balloons and she has a microphone and I took the microphone off of her and started singing.
Stop.
And like was like, I want to sing a song.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's great.
So when did you first know you were going to pursue your creativity as like your career?
Honestly, I think it was a perfect storm of like moving to America and being really homesick. And then as an adult now, looking back on it, I realize it really fucked me up a lot more than I thought. Mm. When I was growing up, I didn't really kind of realize the impact of it. Now as an adult, I look back and I'm like, whoa, I was really like calling out for some help for a few years. I would print out Union Jack flags and like tape them up all over the house.
Because you missed
I didn't
London.
Know how to like lash out to my parents. And so I would tape them up around the house.
You were like ultra British to them.
I was, yeah. And so I would, and I even remember putting the font at 72 on Word and typing out, England is my home and I miss it.
No.
And printing it out and putting it on my door, my bedroom door. And so I just remember being so homesick because I had a bunch of friends in London mm-hmm. and like...
And then when you were in Atlanta, you were like...
So I started being creative, I think, just because I was really homesick and I was looking for some sort of output. Is that what you say?
Outlet.
Outlets.
Right. And output.
In America, we say outlet.
Not output. And you were looking for an output for your output for your microphone.
No, Sarah. No. I was looking for an outlet. I was looking for an outlet. And I was homesick and started singing more, started writing just kind of because I was bored, I think.
When
and
did you
filming
start?
Filming movies. I was doing all that.
I would love to see some
I used
of
to
those.
Make rides. Oh, this is really embarrassing.
Ooh, rides?
For fifth grade, for my fifth grade birthday party, my cousin and I put on a stunt show where we... where we pre-recorded punching sound effects and like and like glass shattering, and we bought breakaway bottles from eBay and like fake cardboard like boxes, like fake boxes, and we invited all of our friends and I invited my teachers over, and they watched us pretend to fight for I was just like, so
your teachers?
My teachers.
Just your teachers?
No, all my friends and my teachers. Oh. Not just my teachers.
You said you invited
like
your teachers over
fucking stunt show conference.
Holy shit, I'm obsessed with that stunt
show. Isn't that amazing?
Do you have a video of that? please.
No,
please.
I don't.
And how old were you?
That was fifth grade, so that was probably like 12 or 13.
Okay.
That's amazing. Yeah.
No longer 11.
No.
So, how'd you start? Like, did you come from a creative family? How'd you start?
No.
No.
No one in your family's creative at all.
I mean, my younger sister is in fashion, but no, she's not really in the creative side. She's more on the business side of it. And so, no, I was always kind of the black sheep. I was going to say the black horse.
No,
I
think I'm really dyslexic. You were the black widow.
I was the black. It's no, just different. It's just different terms. Dropping your own songs.
It's just different terms in London as a
right,
US.
Right. So you were the dark horse. So.
No!
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Black widow and dark horse in 10 seconds of each other.
Okay.
So
the black sheep.
I was the black sheep, I think, creatively, because nobody else in my family did. I mean, my dad is like a business guy, entrepreneur. My brother was kind of more like my dad always. And my sisters, none of them. I was the one like putting on shows and making them act in them and doing choreography and making them learn the choreography.
Did they like it?
Well, they didn't have a choice because I was the oldest sibling. Right. And I was also like really good at being like, come on, guys.
Yeah,
like,
you are.
Mom and dad are going to love this. Like, come on, let's just put on
You're
this.
You're a good leader.
Yeah. So.
Were they good?
I mean, no.
Okay.
They were pretty shit for a while. You mean like the shows and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, no. They weren't very good. They were, I mean, they were like.
What did you think I meant? Your sisters?
Oh,
I don't know. I was trying to figure it out.
Will you critique your sister's performance?
Oh, 1,000%.
Yes.
1,000%.
Where did that voice come from? Just from the heavens?
Yeah. Actually, when I was younger, I looked through the Yellow Pages. I think I was like 13 at this point and found an ad in the Yellow Pages for like, I think it was $20 an hour studio to record in a professional studio or something like that. And so I begged my parents to let me do it for my birthday.
Okay.
And that was like my first time in a studio. And I have the CD and it's really bad. I mean, I don't sound good at all.
I have the same thing. I sang Live to Tell in this like studio I begged by Madonna. Then what about writing? Like, when did you start writing?
Well, I did the first studio album. I did covers. Oh my God, not first studio album. I did the first little album I made in the studio. My greatest hits.
It's very like Dionne Warwick to say that, actually.
It is very Dionne Warwick. I did cover songs. And then the second one, like I went back again a year later and brought my friend. Oh. And we did a Christmas album.
Oh. Mm.
Like all cover songs, obviously.
Cover songs.
Not originals.
And the studio guy really took a liking to her. Mm. And I was furious.
Was she good?
Yes. But she was always like, I mean, it was like me and we weren't competing. We never competed. We sang at graduation together. Her name was Courtney Tarpley. Hi, Courtney.
Shout out Courtney Tarpley.
Shout out to Courtney. And I remember being so upset that he liked her. He loved her voice and didn't love mine. But my voice wasn't fully developed.
Was your voice like, I was about to ask you, was it like it is now?
No, God, no.
Like,
it was bad.
When did your voice go from, because you probably had no control when you were younger. Mm. You're probably just shouting and stuff like that. Like
just shouting into a microphone.
No, like kids do, right?
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
totally,
like,
totally.
When did all of a sudden it like click for you?
I think my voice got really good like right around 18, 19. Because I was like working, I was like started listening to a lot of gospel music around that time.
Like for anybody listening right now who's never heard J-Hart sing, J-Hart has one of the most incredible voices I've ever heard.
Same. Oh. That's why I said,
like,
where
legit.
Where did that even come from?
So that's why we're asking about his voice, because it's incredible.
Yeah, because usually with a voice like that, it's like, oh, my dad's a gospel singer. My grandmother's a this. Like, where?
I grew up in church.
Yeah, it's just literally a godsend.
Yeah, it's a combination of like how my life played out through like going to the studio and then starting to sing gospel music. And then just, I don't know. I think my voice was the most malleable when I started really trying to sing. Really, I started listening to a lot of gospel music and doing all the runs and that kind of stuff. But I couldn't do that before.
But they were like your teachers.
Yeah, the gospel singers. I did take vocal training for about a year, but it was this terrifying Russian lady. And she used to, well, I used to do piano as well, and she would smack my hands when I got a note wrong.
It's much like our relationship.
Right, very.
In the studio when you guys co-write?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Smack you.
Yeah.
Is there somebody like, is there a vocal, one person or like someone or they, like you patterned your style after, or like someone who was like the biggest inspiration in your life as far as like singing?
You know, it's like weird because I feel like at certain times it's been different people, but now I feel like my voice is kind of, I found my own thing, but it's a combination of a lot of different certain things. I was obsessed with Freddie Mercury for a while. I was obsessed with the lead singer of Rascal Flatts for a while. I was obsessed with Shania Twain for a while. And stylistically, there's a lot of things that I've taken, I think, from all of them. And then gospel singer, there's Jay Moss and Kiki Kiara Sheard and the Clark Sisters. Those are all people that I was obsessed with. So it's cool because there's like things that I like have picked up from them, but I don't think that there's one single person that I would model mine.
And you
vocal style
you just have made it your own.
What's the driving force? Like when you first started, like what was the enticing thing? Was it like to create, to conceptualize performance?
Yes, it was. It was really to create. I used to like performing, but then between the ages of like 12 and 16 or 17, I started getting horrible, horrible stage fright. And my theory is that it was because I started figuring out that I was gay and I didn't want people to see me.
Aww.
And so I started having really horrible, like crippling stage fright. And I think it was because I wasn't comfortable with who
with
I was
who
and
are.
I didn't want the audience to be able to see me for who I, or like to be able to see through it. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
But then as a byproduct of that, discovered songwriting.
Right.
Because I was like, well, I love singing so much and I became obsessed with like Diane Warren and David Foster and all those people.
And so what got you to LA?
I was interning in Atlanta for Polo de Don. I interned he was a music producer, if anyone doesn't know.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes.
Amazing.
And he had like a bunch of really big hits, like 2005 to 2009.
London Bridge.
Yep. He did Love in the Club.
Forever.
Usher. Forever. Chris Brown.
Yeah.
Buttons. Pussycat
Buttons,
Dolls.
Right.
Hello.
Everything.
The fucking song.
Everything.
My buttons, baby.
Yes. Yeah, so that's enough. So.
Sorry.
So yeah, I interned for him for 2 years, and he wanted to sign me at the end of it as an artist, actually, but I wasn't comfortable and
right.
I wasn't out. And he also, I was a lot heavier then, like a lot heavier. And he wanted it to be like a shtick. Like he wanted me to be like a funny singing fat guy. And
I wasn't
that.
It didn't.
And I was still not, hadn't come to terms with my sexuality or come out or anything. And I was in like a very religious phase at that point.
Wow, what an interesting combination.
That is very interesting.
All of that.
Yeah, and I started singing gospel music. Yeah. And then
slowly
I was like, you know what? I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to get a publishing deal. I met Rock City, these two amazing guys from Atlanta. Right.
Shout out Rock City.
Shout out to Rock City. Teron. What's up, Teron? Ray Daniels. What's up, Ray? Ray brought me out to LA and he had a JV with Rondor at the time. And I signed my first small, humble publishing deal
with Rondor. So did I.
It was
told
my
you.
First. Yeah, it was my first deal.
Mm-hmm. And then, so from there, so you just got thrown into the session.
Well, I drove out to LA with used my advance.
Yes.
Came out to LA. My cousin lived in LA, so I slept on his couch for like a couple months, and then eventually, you know, I was doing background vocals and stuff. And like vocal producing people. And then I moved into a room at his place. And yeah, just sessions,
Started hustling.
And was recording myself at the house and all that.
When you came to LA, were you out?
I wasn't, to my family. I came to LA, started like coming out to people slowly but surely. A lot of music people didn't know for a long time that I was gay. And I wasn't really talking about it.
But you were out to
I was
yourself.
Out to like my friends, yeah. And I, well, kind of.
Like you weren't like dating girls and like, oh,
No. I wasn't straight.
Right.
I wasn't pretending to be straight.
Right.
But I definitely was like,
it was
I wasn't
process.
Comfortable.
You were,
yeah.
We were in
and
the
then
process.
Slowly became comfortable. And yeah. Yeah. And then slowly started coming out to, and then the music thing, I mean, I've been comfortable probably talking about my sexuality in music probably only for about three and a half years.
That's amazing, though. That's-
yeah.
I just think it's so interesting that... I love hearing about people's adversity and the hurdles they've had to overcome to get to feeling like they're becoming, they're themselves. Like they really like, they really like feel great about it being in their skin. And you started off saying how you felt so uncomfortable in your skin that you couldn't be a performer.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like you moved to a country that you didn't want to be in.
Yep.
Right. Then you felt like you were dealing with weight issues. Mm-hmm. You felt like you couldn't be yourself because of whether you'd be judged religiously or whatever. And you were also singing like gospel stuff, you know, which is, you know, sometimes, you know, adverse to your lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. For a kid, for an 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old to have to deal with all of that.
Yeah.
And then to come out to LA and, you know, with all of that and just kind of like burst through it all. Just be like, I'm just going to break through all of these walls.
It's incredible.
It's like, you know, it's inspirational.
Really inspiring.
Thank you. It didn't happen overnight. Like I kind of wanted it to. I thought I'm going to get out to LA and I'm just going to reinvent myself. But now looking back, it's like, wow, I am just so different than I was 8 years ago when I first moved here.
You've night and day. Evolved.
Yeah.
And so you grew up in a religious...
No, so my parents aren't religious.
Okay.
But they put us into Christian school because they thought it would be a better education. It was a better education.
Sure.
Like I said, I was bullied in England as a kid. Mm. And when we moved out here, my parents were like, we're going to put the whole family into a Christian school, you know, private school, because we want them to get the best education and we want that to feel safe, that they're not going to get bullied and all that. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Christian school going to church just because we would go to chapel.
So you didn't feel like a pressure from religion?
Not from my family.
Right.
But I did feel it just going to Christian school.
Right.
Because there were no gay people at my school. Like, sure. Well, there were, but they couldn't be out.
Did you feel like you had any sort of spiritual connection?
You know, I remember my parents being like kind of skeptical about just religion in general, sort of like, you know, the school would ask for money sometimes and my parents would just be like, why do they need money to build another? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, it was like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was always like the spirit of giving is upon us.
Right.
Please donate for our new gymnasium.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I went to Catholic school, so I know what you mean.
Right. So my parents, I mean, they were kind of just like, they would eye roll at that, but I mean, I did eventually, once I left high school, I got into church and started singing gospel. And it happened after I left high school.
And that's interesting. Because it's probably the music that took you there, maybe.
I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Also because you didn't have to do it.
Right.
That
was another
choice.
Thing. Yeah.
And I feel like so much of your journey of your overcoming adversity was all about you having a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a choice of where to live.
Yep.
LA.
Yep.
You chose, you know, a choice for your physicality, a choice to be who you want to be. Like,
yeah.
I feel like it's so much of like you taking back J Hart.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh,
like that's like the
theme. I love
that.
J Hart.
Taking back J Hart.
It's my lifetime movie.
I love that.
No, I just feel like I feel like that's like the theme of your journey.
No, you're right.
It's like taking back your power.
Totally.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you wrote a country number one.
Yes.
Called Wasted Time for Keith Urban.
Yeah.
Tell us about that process and how did it feel when the song was gaining popularity, when it was hitting number one, when just how did it all feel?
Well, it's so bizarrely full circle and therapeutic because, you know, growing up in the South and being gay, I was around country music and I really took a liking to country pop music. Like I said, I loved Rascal Flatts.
Right.
I loved Keith Urban in high school. I remember one particular summer just listening to a lot of Keith Urban. And so I had always wanted to be involved in Nashville. And when I signed my first publishing deal, I had them fly me out to Nashville a couple times, tried to get in the crowd. But at that point in time, Nashville as a community was a little more sort of like you had to invest in the community. You had to grow up there or be around the right people all the time. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just like fly there and be like, I want to write with the biggest writers.
Yeah.
They weren't about that. So I didn't really have any luck there. And then I was working with Greg Wells.
Shout out to Greg Wells.
Shout out to Greg,
who
I love so, so much. And I was working with him on my music, my solo music, and he said, hey, we have this date booked. I just got an email about working with Keith Urban. Do you want to do it with me?
Amazing.
And I was like, yes, 1,000%. Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, it just sort of happened by chance, but very serendipitous, the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the song do well, it was just like, it was almost more fulfilling than a lot of other songs because I grew up in the South, mm-hmm. and because it was cool to know that, like, I could be a gay, successful songwriter who could have success in country.
I love that.
And I mean, you know, friends from high school saw that, and people from the South saw that, and I was just like,
ah, that's so cool.
That is cool.
And do you feel, when you walked away from the studio that day, were you like, this was special, or were you just like,
no,
yeah, it's cool. Like,
no, it's hard because I'm not always right about those things.
Right.
And sometimes based on my own insecurity, I'll leave thinking like I failed, or thinking like it wasn't great, or he didn't like it, or whatever. And not knowing, and sometimes it's hard to read people. And Keith, like, I didn't know when people say, let's get back in and finish this song, which they do a lot in our industry, you don't know if they mean it.
Yeah.
Or if they're just kind of bullshitting you.
Sure.
So
sure.
When he said that, I was like, oh, he hates it.
You know? Why do we all do that?
he loved it. And then he emailed us and was like, I think this could be my single. And I was like, oh.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting.
That's that thorn creeping back into
your
head.
That is that thorn.
That doubt thorn.
That thorn. It's a real thorn for me.
This is Doubtfire.
Yeah. It's Mrs. thorny. This is Doubtfire. Ooh, it is.
Thorny Doubtfire.
My drag name.
So you're also an artist as well as a songwriter. I mean, I think songwriters are artists.
Yeah.
It's just
inherently.
Yeah. But you're a performing artist, and mm-hmm. you're putting out your own music, mm-hmm. and you've just been on and off the road with Kygo.
Yep.
How has touring been? How has the whole experience been, and putting out your songs into the world? And it's fairly new for you right now.
It feels amazing. It feels really good. I mean, overall, it feels amazing. There's obviously so much anxiety, and I mean, touring especially, it was my first experience touring, and although I feel like I was totally spoiled because I basically was thrown into the highest level of touring there is.
Yeah.
I mean, the first show I did in the States was Coachella.
That's insane. That's
so
very
crazy.
Rare.
Yeah, so it's just weird, but that being said, it was amazing, but there's so much about touring that is just different for me. And I have a really hard time with balance as well.
Mm-hmm.
And being on the road and performing, you know, for 10 minutes every night and having all this downtime,
right?
It's just difficult and it's hard to be productive. And so
mm-hmm.
the experience overall was amazing. And I'm so grateful I did it because I had so much fear about doing it, and mm-hmm. just forcing myself to do it in mm-hmm. itself was so cathartic and amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things where I know if I keep doing it, I'm going to have to just really get better at managing my time better,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that, like, I should dedicate X amount of hours a day, you know, to free writing or being creative or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It's that balance.
Because it's hard.
Yeah.
Not to feel lonely.
It totally throws you off of your normal routine.
Your routine.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. what keeps you inspired. Like the things that you do to get yourself up for like a great session, like get your head right. Now you're like on a bus or flying or whatever you're doing. And it's like, there's certain hours you have to sound check. I feel like you have to figure out quickly how to keep on your toes and like create a new schedule that works for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't figure that out, but I was still also very much sort of like, I'm going to enjoy this experience and just immerse myself in it. And
also, like, don't be hard on yourself.
Totally.
Like, just enjoy it. Like, this is like your first thing.
It was my first time ever doing anything like this.
That's
and I
amazing.
Almost said no. I almost didn't do it. So
did you feel any pressure to like write on the road?
Well, I felt major FOMO just like being on Instagram and seeing people in sessions and getting the, like, even texting with people, and anytime they'd be like, you know, oh, you're on tour. Like, are you writing? And I would be like,
God, so judgy.
Right. And you could like hear the,
and you're like, I don't want people to forget that I'm like a writer too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's all that obviously going on. It's hard for me.
You could have been writing to Kygo.
And to be fair, I did work a little bit. Like I worked with Martin Garrix and when we were in Amsterdam, and I did a couple days.
Great.
Yeah, so it was good, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what I'm used to.
Were the days really packed leading up to the show, or did you have a lot of free
time?
No,
there was a lot of downtime. And that was something that but like I said, a lot of these places I'd never been before. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all over Europe. We did all of Europe first. That was my first leg that I did. And then we came to America or we did South America. And then we came to North America and I did a few select dates in North America. Yeah.
That's so amazing.
So it was cool because I just let myself enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And
it was
a
trip of a lifetime.
It was amazing. And I also, like, I'm fortunate enough this year financially that I felt like, okay, I was like, I'm good. Like,
right.
I don't need to put so
enjoy.
Much pressure on myself. I can really enjoy this for what it is. And so, yeah, I loved it.
So how do you stay grounded when the music industry or when your career gets dark, disappointing? How do you get through it? How do you stay grounded?
Well, I started therapy 2 years ago.
Amazing.
Because I noticed that a lot of my self-worth was a product of how well I was doing or how people perceived me to be doing well. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that has to do with, like, actually gay shame as well. Like, a lot, I mean, I think there's an overwhelming number of successful gay people who take their shame and they just run and they just become successful because they want to feel good about themselves and look good. And I read this, this book, The Velvet Rage, and it talks about that in the book. But, I started therapy because I didn't want to get to a point where my career plateaued, which is a very real, I mean, that does happen. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you have a bad year or something happens and you don't make as much money. Anytime you're doing something creative, there's no guarantees in how much money you're going to make. Mm-hmm. So I knew that there was a possibility that, you know, it's not always going to keep getting better. You're going to have a year where you aren't as inspired. And I didn't want that to send me into a spiral.
Yeah.
So I started doing therapy 2 years ago. And it really helped because it helped me dig up a lot of the reasoning why I put so much attention into like being successful and why I was obsessed with the idea of it and all that. And so once I started noticing those things, I think just being aware really helps. Just having sort of a self-awareness in why you're doing it and why it makes you happy and why something doesn't make you happy and what really fulfills you.
And remembering why you started.
Yeah, totally.
That's always the thing for me is like, wait, why am I doing this? Oh yeah, because I actually love it.
Yeah,
and
it's
enjoy
funny.
It.
I tweeted like some tweet yesterday about not being caught up in the music industry and everybody's hype and everybody sort of self-advertising.
I love that tweet.
I liked it.
And
me too.
Thank you.
I did too.
See, that's validation.
I feel like I retweeted it.
Ooh, I'm going to check that out.
But
afterwards.
If I didn't, I will.
Well, our fact checkers are working.
They're working round the clock, honey.
So what are some things that you've been working on lately that you're excited about? You don't have to say specific names, but...
No, I've been working on more of my own music that I'm really excited about because it's so different for me to get to do that. So that's really fun and like doing the videos and doing the visuals and all that shit. Like I did, like I said, as a kid, I made films and stuff. So it's like...
So you're super involved.
Cool, because I'm like, whoa, this feels like when I was six and me and my cousin used to, you know, make movies.
I love that. So...
That's been fun. And then musically, just evolving. I have been really making a conscious effort to try to evolve. You know, when you see someone that's at the top of their game and someone that is really like fully evolved, or just someone who's just like you've seen the evolution, you're just like, whoa, that is so cool. And that's what being an artist, not performing artist, but just an artist in the general sense of the word means. It's like you're ever evolving. You're conscious of the fact that you're doing this because you want it to be great and you just want to keep getting better. Yes. So, I've been working on that. I've just been working on making sure that whatever I do is not phoned in and that I'm just really in it.
It comes from a real place.
Yeah. And I've been working on a lot of really exciting projects, of course, but
amazing.
You know.
So
where does like your inspiration, you feel like, come from? Do you feel inspired all day long or is it just like, hit you random times?
It hits me at random times.
Sarah and I talk a lot about spirituality and having like a spiritual practice as a means to like balance us so that we can connect to those inspiration things on a daily basis. It's something that we like to call the daily.
Yes.
The daily.
Can I do that with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you do it one more time?
Okay.
Do it again. It's something we like to call the daily.
The daily.
Ooh, I was so flat.
That was cool, though.
The daily.
See how fun it is?
So fun.
What are your daily routines that help you stay connected and creative?
I wake up at 7:30 or 8, try not to look at my phone. It's really hard. I go to yoga, hot yoga at 8:30.
Every morning?
I go, if I'm not going to hot yoga, I am going to training, but not every morning. There are like weekends where I don't go.
Is hot yoga the same thing as Bikram yoga?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
So that, I have a really hard time meditating because of my attention span is just not, it's really hard for me to do. I mean, kind of almost impossible. So
are you like, edede?
Yeah, very edede. Okay. So going to yoga help is cool because it's multi-purpose. It's like I am getting a really good workout, and it help if I'm holding fucking downward dog or some bullshit pose, I can actually not be thinking about things.
No, not bullshit pose.
But you know what I mean? It's easier for me to turn off when I'm like sweating and like shaking rather than sitting in my room like
what am I gonna
staring at the walls. Yeah.
I wish you didn't go so early because I would come with you.
I like going early. I really do because it makes a difference. And with my brain fog and all that shit, because I have all that shit that I deal with and working out in the mornings and then having breakfast and my coffee after that, that's like my...
Where do you have breakfast? Or do you make it? I want to know.
I get 2 eggs.
I have a question. How many days a week, though, are you at yoga, and how many days are you training?
Well, I just started training recently. So now I'm doing like 2 or 3 days a week yoga and like 4 days a week training.
And do you, okay, so that's almost every day.
Yes.
Do you feel like the days that you work out, you're like
so much better,
right?
Creatively,
creatively, so much better.
I feel like a workout in the morning, like get your brain started for the day.
Absolutely, I totally believe that.
Yeah,
there's probably a study somewhere that says that.
I noticed that so much diet. It's
clears
very
your
diet
head.
As well for me. Like my digestive system brain correlation
is that what you? And so you have eggs.
Yeah, literally. What do you have?
every day
eggs. I was like
every day.
I eat eggs for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
He's like, you have eggs.
It's like my digestive system. You're like, you have eggs.
No, what do you literally have?
For breakfast, I usually have, I like to go, there's a place called Sweet Butter near my house.
Oh, I love Sweet Butter.
I found a better place.
Claudine's.
Sorry, Claudine's.
That's where we went. It's bomb.
Claudine's is my spot. So I go there and I read my Richard Branson book and I get my eggs.
Claudine's is in Encino.
Yes.
And Sweet Butter's in Sherman Oaks.
Yes.
But they're only like 10 blocks from
each
other.
And Harvest Moon, I love, is in Studio City. Mm-mm. Yeah, you should try it. Yeah. Wait, what time do you go to Claudine's? Because I want to meet you.
All of our listeners are going to meet you at Claudine's. What time do you go every day?
I go after yoga, so like 10 a.m., 10:30.
Every day?
Not every day. No, some days I like will eat at home, or if I'm training, I'll eat one of
pre-workout.
Yeah.
Right.
The meals. Okay.
And then you shut down for a session?
Yeah,
and
you
get
to work.
Creative.
Yeah, I go to work, yeah.
And is there something you do that like if you were doing emails and calls, or if something's going on, do you have to like shut down for a certain amount of time before you get creative? Can you just like walk into a session, getting off a phone call? Like, how do you transition from your business mind to your creative mind?
It's hard. I think that is something that I have a problem with, because I don't force myself to switch off at any particular time.
Right.
I try to a couple times a week do free writing, and that sort of helps me get ideas, and then I write ideas down, of course, whenever I get them. But you know,
What's the free writing thing?
So free writing, I read an article about it. I don't remember exactly where, but about just trying to make a point for writers, especially, to write just literally anything, kind of just whatever the first thing that comes to your mind is, and kind of the same way that you would exercise to kind of wake your body up, but kind of working that muscle. Mm-hmm. So occasionally, a couple times a week, I'll sit down before my session if I have some extra time and I don't want to read my Richard Branson book, and I'll just write two or three pages of whatever. Now, there is a book
in
my
journaling?
House. Kind of like journaling, but it's like literally whatever comes to my head.
Ooh.
So it could be spooky. It gets weird. Yeah, there's pages in that book that are freaky.
So you handwrite it.
Yeah, I handwrite it, and I literally just write whatever I think of. Don't restrict any
thinking. Do you keep them?
Yes.
Do you ever go back and look at them?
No. But, well, actually, when I'm high, sometimes.
Oh, that's even spookier.
Right, because when I'm high, I'm like, ooh, I want to see like what
right.
I wrote like a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I have the book.
Wow,
so,
that's
it's
cool.
Freaky. Because if I'm like mad at someone, sometimes it'll just come out
right.
when I'm free writing.
I like the free writing thing.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Me too.
I have to decompress for like 10, 15 minutes before I walk into a session. I can't just go. I can't go one into there. But that being said, if for some reason I'm pulled out of a session in the middle of a session to do something business, I can snap back and forth.
Right.
I don't have to do the 15-minute like timeout.
Yeah.
But I put myself on like a timeout, like, and I listen to like not current music in those 15 minutes.
Like
80s
that.
Pop, 90s hip hop, classical music, Sinatra, blues, something that's not what I'm about to write.
Right.
I just like decompress. I listen to classic music.
That's amazing.
I love that.
And yeah,
then
I really like that a lot.
And then I go into a session. I'm like, I like remind myself you're in the moment. Just be here.
Oh, I love
this
that.
This is it.
How mad do I get when we work with either of you and you're on your phone?
So mad. So mad. But
like,
I,
even if you're writing lyrics on your phone.
Listen, I
oh really?
No, not that. But
you
I
do, because sometimes you think that I'm doing.
I stop writing lyrics on my phone
because I
because of the other distractions that come on my phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I struggle with that. To be honest, I'm just. It's a perpetual struggle for me.
No, it is for everybody.
I'm constantly, but I feel like I, especially because people have said things about it to me, like my friends, like when I go out to lunch, they're like, you are so distracted all the time.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'm just really susceptible to being distracted, and I have to really intentionally remember to be present.
You know what, ironically enough, would help you with that?
What?
Because but you feel like you're too distracted to do it.
Meditating. Yeah, totally.
It really would.
Totally. Yeah.
It really would.
Even finding like a quick like little like I know people who will like break away for like 20 minutes at like 3 p.m. and like meditate and then go back to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I know.
You know what? It's so interesting. Like we've talked about it before. Like these breathwork meditations.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the yoga.
Right.
Like you have to do something the whole time.
Right.
Like you have to breathe a certain way.
Yeah.
So you can't think. You don't have time to let all the other shit into your head.
Really?
Because you're concentrating on breathing, mm-hmm. and it's guided, and it's telling you to do things. Like imagine, you know, the happy thought in your life, and grab it, and like pull it to your heart while you're doing this breathing thing. Like there's no time to let anything in.
I feel like
a busy meditation might help you.
Yes. Send it to me. Do you think that it makes you more stable overall?
It does for me.
Yeah.
I never want to meditate, and the days that I do are my most balanced days.
Really?
And
how often do you do it, Sarah?
I do it almost every day.
Wow.
Almost. I mean, there's days that I don't do it, even if it's for, because I do TM too, which is transcendental meditation, which is just basically a mantra over and over again.
Yeah, so I do that during yoga sometimes.
Yeah. So if I don't do like a guided one or a breath work one, I just sit for 10 minutes and do the mantra. Or even there's an app called Headspace.
Yeah, I know. That's the one. My therapist has told me about that.
You literally do 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it just resets your brain.
Yeah.
Is your mantra like an English mantra or is it Sanskrit or something?
You're not
Sanskrit.
Technically allowed to say, because they give you, I was given a mantra by one of the teachers there, and they give you a mantra.
I love that.
Why is that funny?
I don't
know. Because like you have like a super secret mantra.
No, well, in transcendental meditation, you're not supposed to say your mantra out loud. It's only supposed to like live in your head.
Oh, so you don't say it when you're meditating.
No, you say it in your mind.
Oh, see, I talk to myself.
To myself too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but every time you lose focus and you have thoughts, you just return to your mantra.
Cool.
So you don't beat yourself up for having thoughts. You're like, no, oh fuck, I'm thinking. You're just like, okay, that's cool. Go back to your mantra, girl.
But it's a mantra in English.
No.
Oh yeah, it's another language.
Yeah.
Do they tell you what it means? Like you know what it means, or they're just like, say this mantra.
No.
You could
what?
Be saying. You literally could be saying like you could.
Sorry.
You literally could be saying like peanut butter and jellyfish in another language, yeah. And you have no idea.
Pretty much.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the way it sounds, not so much what it means. But
like when I do like that Oprah Deepak one that we've talked about before, Deepak will do like the, you know, and your mantra for the word for the day is like, you know, Sat Nam.
Right. Well, that's like that's like Hindu and you know, and Buddhist
Sanskrit.
Mantras. But this is I don't know the meaning of my mantra, but I love it.
Cute.
She's my friend. Okay. How does spirituality play into your creativity? Like, are you spiritual? Do you have a belief system? Do you believe in a God, in the universe? Like, do you have any of that going on?
I believe that there are other forces at work. I believe in, there are things that we can't see that are, you know, love, energy, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of times in my life, also just serendipity mm-hmm. and as there's like direction and there, you know, the things that you hear and the clues that you get given and the passage that you're supposed to take in life. I don't know that I would put like a label on it as far as a God or, you know, I know that there are other forces at work in the universe and I'm like very open to receive direction mm-hmm. and to be guided. If you want to call God, then God, but,
yeah. But you're not like, there's a man in the sky.
No, but I'm also not like, you know, I guess it's so weird. Cause all these things, meditation, prayer, a lot of them are very
spiritual.
Similar. Mm-hmm. And so there's things that I do in my life to feel connected. And that's some of them, but I wouldn't describe myself as an overly spiritual person, but when you do something creative and you're guided by a force that doesn't make sense to you, you of course have to be spiritual.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing that makes sense about being creative when you get inspiration and you are moved by it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to logically describe how that happens.
Yeah, like I feel in writing songs, like you have sessions where you're in your brain and you're thinking and writing from your brain. And then you have sessions where, like, I think this song we wrote the other day, it just was,
yeah,
we were just vessels,
yeah, totally.
That day, that's what it felt like to me, you know. And then there are those moments where it's something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, so I'm torn to give you a direct answer on that because I do feel like a spiritual person, but maybe it's just years of being in the church or whatever that hearing that question just makes me like, oh, I don't know how to answer this.
Right.
But I do consider myself a spiritual person.
I think that brings us to our last segment.
So, you know, before we end each episode, we like to do something called Golden Nuggets.
Golden Nuggets.
Ah! I love these so much.
Do you love that? That's
babe, was that you?
Yeah, in the casino.
That was sexy.
You know, I love to
that
gamble.
That made me want to go to Vegas with you.
We brought an entire audio crew with us to a casino just to get that.
Yep, just to get that. So Golden Nuggets is a segment where Evan, myself, and our guest, Jay Hart, are asked to bring in or recommend to our listeners something that inspires us. It helps our creative process, quiets the mind, fosters our growth, etc. A tool we love to utilize in connecting with our creative self. It can be a book, meditation, workout, crystal, etc. So let's start with my golden nugget today.
I like that.
my golden nugget today are these Oracle cards. Ascended Masters Oracle Cards by Doreen Virtue. And I always like to bring these. I have all different ones, like angels, flowers, ascended masters, goddesses. Like, they make all different kinds.
Kundalini masters.
Kundalini masters. Yeah, they have all different kinds of cards. So,
joke went over my head.
I've been collecting those. I have three Dumbledores.
Oh, please.
Two Hermione Grangers.
Literally every
and one
Harry
Hagrid.
Potter.
Will you? Can I trade my Hagrid for your Buckbeak?
I'm ignoring all Harry Potter.
We have a quota. We have to talk about Harry Potter at least once every episode.
Oh, I love it. Mm-mm. Okay.
No, you talk about Harry
Sarah
Potter.
Sarah loves Harry Potter.
I love Harry Potter.
Sarah.
I don't have anything
against...
For someone
so witchy, why are you not...
Because it's not real. It's just like fantasy.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Sarah.
I'm into real witchcraft.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, so your Oracle cards.
Yeah, so basically I love these and I bring them to sessions with me and I like to sometimes pull them before the session or before whatever if I'm just feeling like I need a message. So, and you just pull a card and like, for instance, this is Lakshmi. She's a Hindu goddess and the message is flow of prosperity. And then you read a little blurb about it.
And where do you get these cards?
You can get them online on Amazon, eBay. You can get them at House of Intuition, which is a store.
We'll put them up on our website and our Instagram too, so people can see them.
Yeah, any sort of new age spiritual store.
Okay, cool. So my golden nugget is a website. It's called ownlifeclasses.com.
What is it?
Own, obviously. I know I've talked about Oprah before with this Oprah Deepak thing, but my wife's really into a lot of like the Oprah spirituality stuff. Mm. And so she kind of put me onto this website called ownlifeclasses.com. And it's basically like Oprah brings together these like masterclass videos from like all of these different people who will teach you different things like yoga, how to sleep better, how to deal with forgiveness, dealing with negative thoughts, embracing imperfection. And they're like really good. Like you're like, okay, this is going to be really corny, but you're like, nope, these are actually really good. There was one that I was watching, which actually played into earlier about your doubts.
Here, so this is full circle, baby.
Full circle. Okay. So the one I was watching one called Reignite Your Life with Brandon, Burkhard, I think his name is Burchard or Burkhard.
Okay.
But basically the whole thing was like, what happens when you have negative thoughts come into your mind? Because I struggle with that too. Like my voices inside my head will tell me all these negative things. And I'm like, how do I deal with it? How do I deal with it? And then, so my wife like kind of tipped me off to like, hey, you know, on that Oprah website thing that I want, you know, there's a guy who talks about negative thoughts. So the three things that he said, and this is just an example, there's a ton on there. So like, if you're going through anything, like check out this website because there could be something on there that could help you. But the one that I checked out was, what do you do when negative thoughts go into your head? The first thing he said was, which I thought was interesting, which is to complete the negative thought. Mm. Like redirect your energy to see where the negative thought goes.
Right.
Instead of trying to like change the negative thought, like just complete it. And usually you'll see like how silly it is.
Right.
Like what's the worst thing that could happen if your negative thought was real? You know, it's like, you know, complete the thought and realize wherever it goes, it's going to be illogical and ridiculous and cartoonish. Like let the bad thoughts play out because they eventually come absurd. Like, you know, like, oh, I suck. I'm not gonna, you know, this song's terrible. And now I'm never going to write a good song again. And then no one's going to ever want to write with me again. And then, you know, like, you know, I'll get dropped from my publisher and like, and then I'll have to like move out of my house and I'll be homeless. And then I'll have to like, no one's gonna be friends with me anymore. And now I have to, and then you start going through and you're like, wait, this is ridiculous. Like none of this is going to happen. Okay. The second thing about the doubt is condition a new thought. Don't flip the negative thought into a positive, which is something I always do, which is like, I'm always like, you suck. It's like, no, you're not. You're amazing. You're amazing. Instead, don't flip it. Don't give yourself an affirmation, which is what normally you do. Create, condition, and create a new thought. what thought would actually help me accomplish what's in front of me. So instead of like sitting here, you know, thinking like, I'm great, I'm smart. Like think of something tangible that actually help you be of service and help you be in the moment.
Great.
Right. So it's not like I don't suck, I'm great. It's like, no, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to write the best song of my life.
Yeah.
Not like I suck. No, I'm great. So like, yeah, that's the thing. And then the third thing was act towards something. Actually, so after you've done that, do something like take an action, like prove you're in charge, not the negative thought. Even if the action is just like, you know what, I'm going for a walk. It's like, I don't have to sit here and listen to this negative right. thought. And I've conditioned a new thought. I know what I need to do to move forward. Now I'm going to go take action, you know, like get up and walk away and do something else that's contrary to the thought. Like you take back your mind. Take back your life.
Oh, love that.
So, I love that.
Yeah. So
that's so good.
I watched this video the other day and I was like, oh, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, I'm always trying to like psych myself up. Like you're amazing. You're great. Like don't let the negative thought get to you. Instead of having those thoughts, to actually have the thought of like, okay, you know what? You're going to go into this session.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to do. This is the kind of song you want to write. Like actually having constructive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then just you kind of like, you can tell the negative thought, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, so I just kind of loved it. And the entire website itself, the ownlifeclasses.com, has like all these like little master classes that help you through things. Like I kind of want to check out the forgiveness one and like embracing imperfections and stuff like that.
I love that.
I really like that. I'm going to skip watching my Flavor of Love Tiffany Pollard compilation.
No.
And I'm going to watch that instead.
Is that not your girl nugget, though?
No.
Wait, is that what you're watching right now?
No, but I do love like an I love a New York compilation.
Totally.
She's everything.
So what's your golden nugget, J-Hare?
My golden nugget that I was thinking about was this book that I read that I remind myself of all the time. And it is like one of those things where some people might roll their eyes at it, but I really took so much from it. It's this book written by this lady, Elizabeth Gilbert, and it's called Big Magic. And she wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
And
she talks about
Big Magic.
And she talks about how developing a relationship with your creativity. And she talks about not being a martyr for your creativity. She talks about remaining curious and maintaining a curiosity about your creativity and not being so emotionally, you know, attached to your creativity where it's a negative thing and you have to be sad to write or to do whatever you do. And she talks about, it really alleviated a lot of the pressure of being creative for me, because she talks about unraveling an idea and chasing it and how everything is just like a fun, she frames it in such a creative, pressure-free way that there's not a lot of pressure. It's like you find the beginning of an idea and you start to unravel it and you flirt with it and you sort of like, it's really cool. And there's a lot of great exercises in the book. She talks about, you know, all these statistics of like how the same idea was discovered at two at the same time at different parts in the world, and all of these like cool, you know, just really cool things.
I love that.
And she talks about how she thought she would never write another book again after Eat, Pray, Love, and it was her biggest success, and it was her first, you know, book that she ever wrote,
right.
And it was her biggest success, and kind of going forward in life, knowing that the possibility of your biggest success being behind you as a creative person. And so I read this as I was going through therapy and all this stuff, like right at the same time. And
that's amazing.
And for anyone who's creative, it's such a good book.
I want to read that.
You really should.
Is it very autobiographical?
It's also kind of a little self-help. It's a little sort of manifestation and giving you exercises that you can and tools you can use. It's a great combination, which is why I really enjoyed it. And I recommend it to people that I know.
I love that. I'm going to check it out.
You Same. Should.
Was Eat, Pray, Love, remind me, is Eat, Pray, Love autobiographical?
Yeah.
That's her story?
I think so too.
But she did a TED Talk, and that's what made me pay attention to her, because she does a TED Talk about this exact thing.
It's so crazy how I feel like it's so common as creative people to like feel like martyrs. Like we have to be in pain. We have to be sad. What are we going to write about if things are good? Like it's at least I always have struggled with that.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I can't write if I'm sad.
Really?
I don't want to.
See, I feel like there's a
I don't have an urge to like put my sadness onto paper.
I do.
I do. But I also, I can't write when the sadness is raw.
I just want to eat a pizza and go to a movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I can't write like the day after a breakup, for instance. I'm like, you know, bawling into a Lean Cuisine.
Right.
But I can write like maybe.
No!
I love bawling into a Lean Cuisine.
I'm dead over bawling into a Lean Cuisine.
But I can write like.
A week later,
a week or a month later, when it's still the feelings are there.
The feelings are there, but you've distanced yourself a little bit from it.
Yeah,
I can do that. I just mean like right when you're like in the middle of something.
No, I can't do that.
I'm too overwhelmed by my emotion.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Sad, angry. Like I kind of like have to be in a good place to like. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But some people feel like they write their best songs when they're like depressed or that it's like a negative thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even though there is a lot, it's a very powerful thing connecting to a song about sadness because everybody relates to it.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just connects people immediately. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on the other hand, there's, you know.
The hardest thing is to write a happy song though, without it being like the cheese fest of the year.
Yeah. Anyway, great read. Highly
Amazing.
Recommend it.
That's fabulous golden nugget.
I love it.
So that brings us to the end.
I'm very sad.
Oh, me too.
Thank you, Jay Hart, for being our guest and letting us into your creative and spiritual process.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Where can everyone find you online if they want to follow like what you're up to?
Well, my webcam show.
Pornhub.com.
I'm on Instagram at jhart, H-A-R-T, music. I'm on Twitter under the same handle. And I don't really use Facebook, to be honest. I have a website, I think, but I mean, there's a lot of my music on my website.
And what about your song that's out now and the songs that are coming out on Spotify?
They're all on Spotify under Jay Hart.
Jay Hart.
Yep. Everything.
J-H-A-R-T.
J-H-A-R-T. Baby.
Yeah, baby.
And, you know, as always, you can find us at writestothesource.com or on our Instagram at writestothesource. We'll have all of our guests' daily routines and golden nuggets up on our site if you want to check them out and see if they inspire you. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through our website or any platform you listen to podcasts on. And don't forget to review and upvote and tell everyone how amazing we are and share it if you love the podcast.
Yes. Jay Hart, thank you so much for being our incredible guest.
Thank you, guys.
And I always pull a tarot card for our guest that reminds me of your spirit. And I pulled the King of Swords for you because swords are our way, they represent communication and often, you know, our throat chakra and our voice. And sometimes I think of them as pens. Like a lot of writers, actually, I pull swords. Mm. And I just think you're such an incredible communicator through your music and with your incredible voice, and you own it. And we really talked about it in this episode, your transformation of just becoming who you really are as a writer, an artist, a human being. And I think the King of Swords really embodies that.
And you're like just on your journey.
Oh, literally, I still feel like I've so far to go.
You're just on your journey.
But that's so sweet.
But
Sarah,
you really are a pillar of strength and authenticity and incredible creativity to me.
Thank you, Sarah. That means a lot.
And I love you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Evan. Thanks, Sarah. I've had such a great time.
Yes. Thank you, everyone who's tuned in. And don't forget, when you're being creative and you want to connect, let it go and let's go
right to the source.